Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 42 of Youth Hacks, an internet talk show for youth workers. I'm Josh, and I'm here with some of my good friends from JoelDiaz.com. Joel Diaz.
Hello.
And from PattyGibbons.com. Patty Gibbons. Patty, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so Patty, you were on episode 32 last, and in the past, it would have taken us about 3 years to record 10 episodes, but we're on a streak, so we've done 10 episodes in 11 weeks, so...
That's fabulous. Well, congratulations.
You're a good luck charm.
Woohoo!
And so Sarah is traveling, and we would have just rescheduled, but she's going to be out of town and not available online, so... We'll bring her back in the fold next week. So, but I'm sure she misses you guys very much. And I'm sure you guys will miss her her barbed insults at Joel and I.
Yes. Oh, well.
That she likes to throw around. Patty, before the show, we briefly talked about, we mentioned YM Exchange. And it kind of got me thinking, this is not in the order of service here.
I'm a liturgical kid. I don't know if I can improvise like this.
Well, Joel and I came from a Pentecostal church, so you're just going to have to roll with this for a second.
You got to flow with the spirit, Patty.
Hang on. Here we go.
You know, guys, I prepared a message today, but I just feel like... I feel like I didn't prepare that well, so we need to sing like 5 more songs. Patty, I was wondering, so... the internet looks pretty different than it did when YM Exchange... was around and flourishing for a lot of different reasons. You know, I mean, I think Twitter and Facebook were not as prevalent then, and people in the youth ministry world probably needed a place to congregate. Do you think that that's, I don't know. So how do you think, when you look back at YM Exchange, how do you think about that? And do you think that there's still a need for, I don't know, a place for youth workers to get together and talk about stuff?
I do. And when YM Exchange started, it was 2005, and the bulletin board, the message board, the forum kind of format was, you know, sort of the cutting edge of things. And we look at that now and we go, people use those still? And social media really is the thing that that kind of killed the bulletin board to a certain degree. I mean, I'm sure that there are some that are still out there that are, you know, have some activity on them. I'm not sure they're youth ministry bulletin boards. Because youth ministers tend to be sort of on the cutting edge of different technological advances. And the number of people that I'm connected with on Twitter and Facebook because of youth ministry events, conferences, because of Youth Ministry Exchange, because of, you know, different links in to blog posts, infrequent for me as they are, in like youth specialties in different places, those people are much more interactive on social media than they ever were on bulletin boards. So I really think that kind of a technological advance, the ease with which we can connect with people without having to sign up more than once and have different places where we have to check, it sort of streamlines everything to have the Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr kind of interaction.
But do you think we've lost anything with kind of the new web? I personally kind of think about places where you have, where you still have bulletin boards or forums. And, you know, there still are in some communities very, very active forums. And the kind of the spirit or attitude is different, partially because they're closed off. I don't know. There's less self-promotion. Like, it seems like I don't know, Twitter and Facebook, people are always, they always have a product they're trying to sell. They always have their brand they're trying to push. And that wasn't there before. Is that just me?
No, I think that's very true. People are constantly, I think, maybe it's the Seth Godinism of youth ministry. You know, we're all marketers now. Yeah. To a certain degree. And so we're always trying to put that stuff out there. And I work pretty hard to not do too much of that. Yeah. Just because what I put on my various social media accounts is just me. If people want to be involved in, you know, conversationally with me or professionally with me, they're going to know me. And I don't, you know, I'm not hung up on that as much as I know there's some people who are, and they have good reasons for doing that. I'm not criticizing that. But you're right that in the forum situation, in the bulletin boards, because you did have to sign up, there was that extra kind of password wall that was between you and the rest of the internet. And unless your tweets are protected, or you only accept friend requests on Facebook from people that you know in person, or what have you, you don't have that kind of privacy. And I say privacy very loosely in the internet definition of the word. I mean, because sure. It's behind a password doesn't make it private. You know, you have to be concerned with the fact that everything on the internet is public anyway. I mean, a simple screenshot or a click of that share button and it's wherever somebody wants to send it. So,
In the forums, like if there's 1,000 people in the forums, that's the cap on how many people, you know, your potential audience is. But on Twitter, it's, you know, effectively unlimited. And I think for some people that's tempting. They're like, you know, this is the place where I'm going to go out and stake my claim, my personal sense of celebrity. Cause, you know, there's a little more egocentric feel to it, you know, and it's tough because, you know, I hate to get in that game. But at the same time, like when we make a new episode, there are lots of people who at this point, they don't use RSS readers and they don't subscribe to podcasts. They just expect if something's coming up, it's going to show up on Twitter. And so people, they want to see the link on Twitter and that's how they're going to go listen to it.
Right. I get very few comments on my blog. Most of the comments come on Facebook or on Twitter when I post. I have to qualify that because I'm really horrible about regular posting. But I find that more interaction comes through social media than even in blog comments. Now, that's not true for everybody. I'm sure for the folks who post regularly, they have a regular following of folks who comment, but I've found that when I get some interaction, it's usually through Twitter or Facebook.
All right, so before we need to move on to another step, but one more question. So do you feel like you met more people in the YM Exchange days than you meet online now?
No.
It's the same.
Yeah. There was a core group of people that were very active posters there. And then there were a bunch of other people that had that joined, even when it was a pay site, they joined and mostly used it as a resource, would pop in from time to time and, you know, post a question, but weren't regular interaction type folks. And I see some of those people now on other social media sites, and they're much more interactive this way. I think being able, they see it to a degree, having some more control over who they're seeing, even though your point is actually quite correct that their audience is really much broader this way.
Well, anyway, I guess, you know, as much as I love social media, I guess sometimes, you know, you get the feed that kind of crawl into your skin a little bit. And I was trying to whitewash the past, I guess. It was the bad old days. All right. So we have a couple of articles that we've seen online we thought might be worth talking about. And the first one, if you listen to the show, may seem like it's from an unlikely source. So over at The Resurgence, Mark Driscoll wrote a post called "The Crisis of Conference Christians." And in this post, he touches on a couple of things that maybe some things that are things that I've kind of gotten fired up about in the past, and maybe a couple things that I kind of felt like may have called me out in a few ways. But basically, he's talking about where as he goes around and speaks at different conferences, he notices that he'll speak at 5 different conferences and see the same people at all 5. You know, he kind of has an issue with it. And a couple of the points that he brings up, I think are very astute. First, he says that when you go to, when you kind of become obsessed with conferences, one thing you do is you make a pseudo elder board. So he says they have a pseudo elder board that they self-select from their favorite preachers and authors. This allows them to not submit to a local team of actual spiritual leaders who know them, but rather just defend themselves by appealing to their heroes who would be embarrassed to see how they were being used by conference Christians. Now, that's obviously Mark Driscoll's signature tone there. But, I mean, this is something. I'll read the next point as well. So he talks about comparison. He says they start comparing the preaching music and overall experience of their favorite conference to their local church Sunday experience. This makes it impossible for the average pastor in church to ever measure up. Now, I notice this all the time with my kids, and I try to subvert it. They'll say, for instance, man, are you going to go see so-and-so when they come in town? Man, they are so amazing. It's just so great to be there when they lead worship. And I'll say, what's so great about it? And they'll go, oh, it's just amazing. And they're so anointed and powerful. And I'll say, so what's different about that than when, you know, this kid leads worship for our group? And I try to, you know, gently subvert that stuff a little bit, but, I don't know. Joel, what'd you think when you read this?
I agree with him. I know some of those people. And I think you were just kind of hinting at it, I guess, with the, when you brought up the whole leadership thing, that you could do away with that word and just how it pops up in conferences, and we got into conferences and stuff, but yeah. Man, I know. I met this one youth pastor just a couple of weeks ago that goes to four different conferences during the year, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's a lot of conferences.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and so I don't know. You know, people that listen to the show, they know we have R1 that we go to, and we mainly go there to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, the speakers are great and the bands are awesome, but if all the same people were still going and there was nothing planned, I would still go. So, you know, I totally agree with them. And there are people that are, I think number three, the whole addiction thing, they're addicts to these events, is true. To me, it seems like a high schooler, if they were able to go to summer camp five times a year to get that spiritual high.
Yeah.
You know, they might do it. And that's what it kind of, it just reminds me of watching a student in my youth ministry trying to chase a spiritual high at these big events.
Yeah.
So
it is interesting that we get to sort of this, that self-select term is interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's convenient now. I get to say, hey, you know, here are the five guys that I really love, and I'm just going to read their blogs and subscribe to them on Twitter and buy their books and choose to go to their sessions. And that's the world I'm going to create for myself. And I'm just going to hear their ideas. And when, you know, kind of in my actual life and actual ministry, when someone says something to me that I don't agree with, I can appeal to those heroes of mine. And, that's not really a healthy way to be a part of a community. And that's, I don't know. That doesn't seem to be how churches are supposed to be set up. Patty, you're at conferences, fairly regularly, at least.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this?
I think that there's some, you know, like a lot of the things that Driscoll says, that there's a part of it that is true, that he's, you know, he's found a button to push. And I think we saw it with the whole Rob Bell Love Wins controversy. People sort of threw themselves into these different camps backing their favorite authors, kind of theology or way of discussing or way of presenting an idea. And so they kind of lined up along those same lines. Like, I'm going to go because fill in the blank person is speaking. I really want to hear them again. It was very challenging. And I know I've been guilty of the second one of, you know, coming back from like a run of conferences, thinking, gosh, I'm just discontented here. I'm just, you know, this is so routine. This is so normal. Well, guess what? That's what community is. And that was very, yeah. And when I read that, I went, oh yeah, I felt like that. But I think part of it is being with people, especially the youth workers conferences for me, is being with people who have a common passion. So I just, like you said, Joel, I can't see spending, you know, I mean, it costs $1,000 at least to go to any one of these conferences out of town. And that is a lot of money for people to spend.
Yeah. You know, I think that just on the comparison thing, because I work with music at our community's level, since for the past 10 years, everybody knows what great worship music sounds like. Like, there's, you know, when Joel and I were younger and playing music in our youth ministry, youth ministry music was kind of like folk music in that, you know, somebody would learn a few songs and they teach them to somebody else and they teach them to somebody else. And I didn't really hear a lot of worship music that was recorded by professional musicians. It was, you know, I just learned from a dude that played guitar in our community. But when how, you know, whatever the heck happened in the late 90s and early 2000s and worship music became kind of a bigger industry, everybody knows what a great music sounds like, and they know every single week in their church that what they're hearing is not, you know, top class worship music. And it's challenging, and it makes a lot of people discontented. And in my community, you know, I mean, we're 5 minutes from North Point and a lot of other big churches. You know, Passion City Church is a big deal here now, and people will just go there because, you know, it's a better product. But I do think it forces you to ask interesting questions, like what is happening when I'm standing in a congregation and someone is singing music on a stage? Like, what is actually happening there, and what really matters there, and what really doesn't matter there? So,
yeah, it's definitely interesting when you compare the personal, when I compare my personal reaction, and then I would go with students to a student conference and watch them in the same way. You know, I think, oh, we have to go back and, you know, they might play something on the organ this week, and that would just be a bummer. And, you know, of course, that was a few years ago that they said that. But it's hard. It's hard to watch them, you know, recognize the effect of excitement, which is what it really is.
Yep.
And kind of crowd synergy and mistake that for the Holy Spirit.
Yep. I mean, it's undeniably awesome to get in a room with a bunch of like-minded people and have a big stage, loud sound system, and shout out. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anyway, that is interesting. I think there's something that happens with preaching and music and a lot of different stuff. But it's worth remembering that the comparison game is not necessarily very healthy. Friend of the show, Lars Rude, wrote a post called Youth Ministry as a Stepping Stone to Real Ministry. You can go check out the article at his blog, largeread.com, but kind of where he lands with it is, he talks about recently where his students were up in front of the whole congregation and how moved he saw, he noticed the congregation was very moved. And, he kind of asked, what if youth ministry was a stepping stone for people in your broad community to get involved in doing ministry? And this is something I've seen a lot, where there's kind of a community of adults formed inside of the youth ministry, and where the staff and youth pastor kind of become pastors and staff for the adults as well. Sorry, I'm going to fold Joel back in here. He keeps dropping. So, you know, where they come to volunteer, but in fact, that ends up becoming their primary community. And sometimes people who are looking for a way to plug into church and they don't really know how, sometimes the youth ministry can be a place for them to jump in and do that. Joel, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. So have you seen that happen at your church where, people kind of who are floating in the church find the youth ministry as a place to kind of get anchored, and maybe that's a first step for them into doing ministry?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially, relationally driven people that are just comfortable chatting, really tend to float into the youth ministry. And I've seen that in the past, but I guess in the context that I find myself now, it's more, I guess, since I'm in more of a traditional mainline church, the leaders that I tend to get are, the parents of students, and they only serve in the ministry while they're students there. It's kind of like, well, when my kid graduates, I graduate out of youth ministry.
Yep.
And then they go on to do something else, and they become like an usher.
I gotta say, these sound like terrible people, Joel.
Yeah,
usher.
Yeah,
that's the worst.
I know. Yeah, they work the park. You know, they work in the parking lot.
Oh, stop it!
You know, helping people park and stuff. You know,
well, that's not important at all.
Yeah. I mean, we all know youth ministry is the most important thing in the church, but
that makes me think of you guys ever heard how Steve Jobs, when he was at Apple, when he was younger, was trying to recruit the CEO of Pepsi to come be the CEO of Apple. And his pitch was, do you want to keep selling sugar water or do you want to change the world? And so you got to say, hey, listen, do you want to help people park their cars or do you want to change kids' lives?
Right.
That's what you say to him, Joel.
Okay.
Flooding through the doors.
Note to self.
you can listen to the recording later to get it word for word.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Oh, no,
but yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people that come through youth ministry. It's just an easy place to jump in. And I really don't have a problem with them if they just if they come in and they just kind of launch, you know, continue on to something else in the life of the church. I think that that's cool. And so I've had a few leaders that have done that, and I've had a lot of leaders that have stuck around, and we've known some of them. We had some of the same leaders in Atlanta who are still there,
yep,
at some capacity in the youth ministry. I think that's fantastic. So
now, yeah. Now I know Lars is at a big church, and yeah. Joel, you and I have both worked at big churches before, but so this might be uniquely a factor at large churches, but sometimes for someone who's coming through the church, if a youth pastor asks them to volunteer, that might be the first time a pastor has spoken to them at the church.
Yeah.
So for some people, I mean, it really does become their primary community, and that youth pastor becomes their pastor. Like, you know, if something bad was going on in someone's life on our team, you know, the pastoral care was coming from people in the youth ministry staff. So, but Patty, does that look different in your congregation?
My congregation is pretty small, so yes, it looks very different. People don't volunteer for anything in this tiny little congregation unless you specifically ask them to, because the same, 20% of the congregation is involved in everything. So it's one of those situations where to get leadership to spread out, you really have to be proactive to go after those, you know, the other 80% who aren't. Sort of are marginally involved in different things. They participate, but they don't see themselves as leaders. And to develop that is the hard work. And for some reason, those folks seem to be intimidated by teenagers. So it becomes one of those issues where you want them to see that, you know, ministry to youth or children or parents isn't as scary as it sounds. And make it so that it isn't scary. Give them, you know, some specific guidelines and just a specific job to do. Like I had one older gentleman that wanted to help with youth ministry, but doesn't really like kids. And we worked hard to find a role for him, but he came in and set up tables and chairs and did logistics things behind the scenes. That was such a gift to me. So it sometimes is a matter of finding the way for a particular person to serve. And then he went on to become actually to join the staff of the church as a logistics coordinator for things like Holy Week and pre-Christmas stuff, you know, just making sure that things ran smoothly and equipment and people were where they needed to be when they sort of our own stage manager. It was a great thing.
That's awesome. You know, you mentioned being intimidated by teenagers. It makes me think, I heard Chap Clark last year at his Critical Concerns course, and I think this is something we all know intuitively, but to hear it said specifically is interesting. You know, he said that when someone walks into a room of teenagers as an adult for the first time, they revert to high school, which, you know, I think we all kind of know that to some degree. Mm-hmm. But he talked about, you know, how the way that they responded to different kinds of kids as teenagers, they will respond. Like, so if they were outgoing and popular, chances are they're going to gravitate towards really popular and outgoing kids. Whereas, say they were, maybe they weren't so high up the social ladder, they might be intimidated by kids that were cool. I thought this, you know, I think it's something that we all know intuitively. Like, I think that when we first started youth ministry, we all kind of had that. You walk into the room with teenagers and you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? I don't know, but hearing it said that way.
I feel that way about adults.
So the way that you felt when you were an adult?
No, I feel like I did when I was a high school student when I'm in a room full of adults.
Yeah, that's true.
It's scary.
It is. It's very intimidating.
Very important people, these adults.
Mm.
A lot of important things with money.
Yes, usually it has to do with money. That's maybe why it's scary.
Yep. Money and golf. There's a lot of golf.
No, I don't play golf.
So. I don't play golf either. Joel does. Joel just played golf.
Just started.
With a bunch of my friends last weekend, and I couldn't
really?
Be
Really? A new hobby.
I know, and it's fantastic.
Because, you know, Joel, you don't really have any hobbies, any things that you're into.
Really? Nothing. Nope. Doesn't go sit in the woods looking at little deer.
And that's why I like golf so much, is it gives me another chance to be outside.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, I also want to bring up one idea. There was a post, this came up somewhere on Twitter. Oh, David Grant linked to this. And it's a post by a guy named Terrace Crawford. And he, in the post, he's kind of talking about his idea for starting a coaching network, which I don't know what that means. But I think Tim Schmoyer does something similar. And again, I don't really know what that means either, but so
Tim Schmoyer, you don't know what that means?
Or? Well, I do know what that means. okay. That means a very handsome man who's been on the show. He's very gracious to us.
Wow. Little man crush there?
No, not at all. Okay. I'm saying Tim's been nice to us. So we
should be yeah, nice he's a good Tim. Guy.
So the question he lands on is, do you need a coach? Which maybe for him is a sales pitch, but for me is just also an interesting question. One of the weird...
say youth ministry coaches are overrated.
Whoa. Okay, so now.
So is keeping a point.
Okay, so that's kind of an inside joke. So everybody knows Patty is my youth ministry coach. It's a joke.
Yes,
that's
right. Yes, she is.
Okay, so this is a good opportunity to talk about what that means and what that means for you guys and maybe what else that could look like. So just for me, when I think of youth ministry coach, I think it could be someone who is. Who has more experience than you. It could be someone who has an outside perspective. For me, the idea of someone who, like, you know, I sort of look to a few people like this in my life, like people who've been doing youth ministry before I was a teenager, you know, and continue to do it. People like that are rare. And also, you don't get to work with them. Usually, you know, if you have a staff at all, you might be the only youth worker on staff. So to get to actually work directly with someone who's had a lot more experience than you is pretty rare. Whereas in other fields, you know, that happens all the time. So I do think there's a need for that in youth ministry. But Patty and Joel, what does coaching look like for you guys?
Well, Joel, you go first.
Share my darkest, deepest secrets.
You do not.
No. I started coaching with Patty. I think the first time was at the end of 2009. Right,
yep.
Patty?
Yep.
Yeah, right after Cincinnati. National Youth Workers Convention in Cincinnati, and great, because at that point I had been doing youth ministry for a little bit over 10 years, and she helped me really refocus and identify things in my ministry that maybe certain areas I took for granted. I thought they were just happening, because when you start doing something for so long, it's kind of like you kind of get in cruise control mode, and she helped me get out of cruise control mode and start paying attention to certain things and help me accountable to kind of implement the things that we were talking about. So it wasn't just these concepts and ideas that we were talking about in our conversations on a month, actually putting together action points and taking action and moving the ministry forward. For me, the biggest thing was I walked into a church where my predecessor made it very easy for me to be a rock star. And things just didn't work out with them and my predecessor. And funny thing is, I actually have a relationship with that guy now, just through networking down here in South Georgia with other youth workers. And we're actually going to be doing something together here in the very near future between our churches down here. But it was an easy thing for me to walk in and just do everything right. I couldn't do anything wrong. I honestly just got a little lazy, and they didn't care because I was still doing a really good job. But what happened is people started depending more and more on me, and all the attention got turned towards me. And before I knew it, I was running the whole thing, almost doing everything on my own, which is a very dangerous place to be. And so now I feel pretty confident that there's a youth ministry at my church where, you know, if for any reason I had to leave, I think it would be a healthy healthy ministry that would continue to operate just because of all the people that have come in and have a hand in what's going on now on a day-to-day basis through volunteer and through support staff. So that's what coaching has done for me.
Patty, how do you think about coaching?
Well, I've gotten to a certain point in youth ministry. I mean, I've got more than 20 years doing this. And I thought, why am I not sharing what I've learned and the mistakes, you know, what I've learned, especially from the mistakes that I've made, because things that even Joel and I have talked about that were going really well for him, or even the things that needed tweaking for him, are things that I have both done right and done wrong in the past. And I tend to be a little bit more administratively minded than most of my youth ministry peers. Is that a good way to put that? I like to both, I love people who are visionaries and have this big, you know, goal that they want to achieve or be or reach. But a lot of people who can think big vision like that aren't the kind of, I call them bricks and mortar people. Like, how many bricks does it take to build that castle? You know? Yep. And I love to help people put those lists and goals, you know, this interim kind of the pickets to the whole fence. You know, how do we build this and put this together? And that's what I see as my role. I never, ever have told Joel, this is what you should do. Mm-hmm. Ever. Or any, I mean, I have several other coaching clients as well. And I never say to them, this is what you should do. We talk through a list. You know, these Joel and I had a few conversations about what are the goals? What would you like to see? What would that look like if you reach that goal, what happens next? Those kinds of questions. I mean, I have a whole notebook of questions and answers from each of my coaching clients that we talk through. How do we get there? Okay, that's great that's where we want to go. Is that a trendy thing that you want to do? Whenever somebody uses a word like missional, well, we have to unpack that. What does that mean? What does that look like on the ground for your students? How are we going to get your students and your families at your church in your context? It goes back a little bit to the conference mindset, because we can come away from these big youth ministry conferences with my youth ministry is going to look like HSM at Saddleback. Well, it's probably not. but how can we make it the best
for your context? Because first of all, where are you going to get all those Hawaiian shirts?
Exactly. You might really connect with some things that Doug Field says, but I can tell you with some, you know, I've met Doug Fields and you're probably not him, because, you know, your voice doesn't sound like his, you don't have a bunch of books out here.
Your name is,
you know, not, you're not as tan. That's
he
also sure.
He has a very unique set of experiences, that he both was subject to and has earned over a long period of time that most of us have not had.
Right. And even if you take, I mean, it used to be when I was, you know, about the middle of my timeline here in youth ministry, this book called Purpose Driven Youth Ministry came out and everybody thought, hey, I can take this and I can apply it, even though it says right at the beginning not to do this. I can take this book and I can make my youth ministry just like Doug Fields' youth ministry. Well, no, you can't. But how do you plan and how do you learn to hold yourself accountable to these goals that you want to set? How do you set the timeline for developing students and handing ministry over to them, not just telling them what to do, but giving them the tools that they need to do ministry themselves? Or like we talked about with adult leaders, how do we develop them and turn things over? And what are you doing that you don't need to be doing? And it's part of a bigger discipleship picture, which is something that I'm really passionate about. So that's when I go into a coaching relationship, that's where I come from, is I want to see people replicating disciples. And replicating sounds so Star Trek-ish, but the idea is I want to see them building into people in the local church, regardless of age. Building into people in the local church who will build into more people in the local church, and let's spread this kingdom thing around.
You know, I think it's so interesting that you talk about the administrative side of youth ministry, because I just don't think it's something that anyone cares to talk about. But I think it's actually extremely important. And actually when I first started the site, I guess 4 years ago now, that was kind of the idea, was that it was going to be looking at day-to-day, nitty-gritty workflow kind of stuff around youth ministry. Because, you know, I think that really if you care about administrative stuff or you care about setting goals or actually, you know, producing something every day, that doesn't mean that you don't get it and you love to sit at a desk as opposed to hang out with kids. It just means that the stuff that you say, you care about enough to get it done.
Right.
You know, and I also think about, I think a lot of people in youth ministry would love to say that they, you know, they would get a job where they sit at the top of a team of youth ministers and they get to just toss out ideas and other people go run and do them. And the 37 Signal guys have written kind of extensively about the idea that no team needs an idea guy. Nobody needs someone who just produces ideas and walks away. Because that's not really I mean, ideas are really cheap. Like, we could sit down and have a list of 100 awesome student ministry ideas right now. And it would just be absolutely worthless, you know? Kind of nothing matters until you put feet to it. So I think that's... It's really interesting that you come at it at that angle. And I bet it's one that... I bet that's not the primary sales pitch that's going to get a lot of people to sign up for something.
No, but
it's
probably
what they really need.
A few people. I mean, when we first talked about it, I asked... I mean, well, I can just... Because Joel is here, I can talk about him. You know, we can say... I asked him, why do you think this would be a good thing for you? And this is... You know, this was after we talked about who I am and kind of how I come at life. And... why do you think this is a good thing for you? And we've had a particularly good coaching relationship. I've had others where that's not what somebody wanted. And that's not what somebody needed, where we just decided not to continue that relationship anymore. So it doesn't hurt my feelings if what I have isn't what your ministry or what your development personally needs. It doesn't hurt my feelings at all, but I come at this from a point of view of, I'm a vocational youth worker. I speak, I teach, I want to come alongside other folks. And it doesn't really matter to me whether you have 10 months or 10 years in ministry. If these are ideas that you want to bounce off of somebody and have somebody kind of help you to set what needs to happen in order for you to reach those goals, because I know even when I do this for myself, I'm self-employed. So when I have a goal, I need to do both parts for myself. And sometimes that's a challenge, you know, to do both. Like, I have this big idea, but what do I have to do to get there? You know, I want to write more on my blog. Okay. Now what do I write about? You know, sometimes it's more of a challenge. It's easier to help somebody else walk through a challenge than it is to meet it by yourself.
Sure.
And that's the positive. And that's what I like about what Terrace wrote in his blog post, is people who recognize that they need some guidance. And he doesn't specify what sorts of things he's talking about, but recognizing that, you know, we shouldn't be doing this by ourselves and kind of bringing an end to that Lone Ranger youth worker persona.
If I may get on my high horse for one second and then we'll move on. I have been around and heard youth workers kind of talk about organization or follow through or administrative ability or whatever as a personality trait. Like, you know, oh, he's just good at yada, yada, yada. Or, I'm not really so good. I'm not really that great at replying to email. Like, they didn't get the replying to email gene or something. and every time someone says that, it's like, good, man, dude, no one loves to just sit down in front of their to-do list and do all the stuff that's on it that they don't feel like doing right then. You know, no one likes it. Nobody likes to respond to a difficult email or, you know, that's probably not what anyone would love to be doing at the time. But it's called being an adult, you know? And I do think that it probably is not as true as it once was, but it is, I think there are some people who come into youth ministry who are in some way, at least in a sense of arrested adolescence, you know, they're kind of just stuck in, that spot. And so there are times where it probably is just time to grow up and do the stuff that's difficult. Whether or not you think that it's what you'd like to be doing or your area of gifting, like maybe you didn't get the spiritual gift of doing the really boring stuff in your ministry, but you probably need to do it anyway. So that was for me. Sorry.
Okay.
All right.
You feel better now?
No.
Okay.
Do you guys ever meet anyone like that though, where it's like, oh, you know, I'm not so great at that, or oh, you know, I just have so and so that does that. It's like, well, you know, you probably should be taking care of that stuff.
Some of it is just boring, mundane stuff, but that's not the stuff that I see holding most youth workers up. It's more like I just don't know how to plan long term.
Yep.
Or I need somebody to nudge me.
That's right.
Occasionally. And those are the sorts of things that coaching relationships, whether it's one-on-one or in a group, a network. I know there's a bunch of them. Like Mark Ostreicher has one that's gigantic and growing and just an amazing program. But it just depends on who you are and what you need, what sort of a coaching relationship you need to be involved in. Everybody needs a mentor, and coaching is like that.
Yep.
But also different, because you're entering into a professional relationship as opposed to a friendship sort of deal. So,
well, Patty,
although Joel and I are friends.
That's true.
Yes.
Well, Joel's friends with everyone.
Yeah, because he's that kind of dude.
How could you not be friends with Joel? but Patty, you've tempered what I said. Let me reframe it briefly. So I guess the thing that really gets under my skin is the idea that things that everyone finds difficult, but you have to do because it's your responsibility. Some people kind of it's a way to deflect responsibility to kind of throw your hands up and say, oh, I'm not really great at that. It reminds me of the scene in The Office. You guys remember when do you guys watch The Office?
Yes.
Okay, so there's an episode where Ryan didn't want to clean the microwave, and he was asking Pam to do it, and he's like, oh yeah, I'm just terrible at cleaning. I'd probably make it worse. And she goes, well, there's no way you could make it worse. And he goes, oh, I'd find a way. Which, you know, obviously was just an excuse to not clean the microwave. But sometimes I've been around youth workers, I think, kind of do that. Oh, you know, it's just, I just don't have that in me, so.
Right. I don't need to clean the pop bottles out of the back of my car. It's not important.
Yep.
They'll go away if I ignore them long enough.
Yep. We'll get a guy for that one day. Yeah, we'll get a guy. All right. So I think we had another topic we're going to hit. I think we probably have gone long enough to where we probably seem to jump into our picks, though, which is good, though. We actually have some really awesome picks this week. So let's start with Patty. Patty, what's your pick this week?
My pick is actually an iPhone app, and I don't even have an iPhone. But RJ Grunewald is both a youth worker and an iPhone app developer. And he's developing this app called Clips. And what it is basically movie clips that go with different topics and Bible verses, and you can have it right on your iPhone. If you are an Android user like I am, I want you to just incessantly tweet RJ Grun and encourage him to develop this for the Android platform as well. It's basically Bible study in your smartphone. You can teach the Bible and use clips. And if you go to, it's actually clipsapp.com or at clipsapp on Twitter. You can watch a video to see what it will do. It's in development now, and he's accepting people who are willing to be beta testers for that. So if you are a cutting edge iPhone user that wants to help test this app for youth ministry, definitely go to the site and apply to be one of those people.
It looks like the app is not clipsapp.com. That's like a clipboard thing. It looks like it's – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say clips-app,
maybe? Ah, okay. That might be it.
But at clipsapp on Twitter is – you'll get links to all of that.
Oh, I see. Yep. So I'm very interested in this. So now – the clips, do they actually play the clips on your phone, or do they give you time codes?
I think it plays it, but I've watched the video, and I think he's still developing it based on feedback from the beta. So I would be hesitant to see what folks, you know, I would be hesitant to say this is exactly what will be in it.
Gotcha.
At this point.
Because there have been other services that kind of popped up. One is called AnyClip. And their idea was that you would just be able to type in keywords and clips that were associated with that keyword. So if you typed in, I mean, this is not geared at church groups. It would work for church groups. If you typed in Mustang, like a clip would come up with horses or with cars. Or if you typed in bravery, there would be clips that came up like that. And right. They were not able to license the content. So now they have public domain movies. So it's like, you know, everything's like pre-1950 whatever.
Right. I think that this is sort of an iPhone app or an app version of kind of what Wingclips has, where it's categorized. I don't know the extent of the collection or how he's going about the licensing or any of that, but I know other apps that RJ has developed have been just tons of fun. So
this could be a big deal if it works.
Discernment, and he's an actual youth ministry professional.
Wow.
You know, this, he develops apps for, you know, fun. So I just thought it was cool that he was finally developing one for youth ministry in particular.
Yeah. I mean, if it works well, I will use this every week. Because, you know, there are so many times where I know there have to be 100 ways, 100 scenes that illustrate a point well. But, you know, my brain is not a very good database, and it doesn't always call them all up. So this is awesome. I'm applying to be a beta tester right now.
I knew it.
Click, click, click.
I'm sure he would make a, oh no, I'm too late. Beta signup has been closed.
Oh no.
Rejected.
I feel like
then sign up for the newsletter so that you can get,
yeah, that's a good call. I'll do that.
Updates on the app. Yeah.
I'm sure he would do Android, but it seems like people make more money on the iPhone side.
It's possible, but I can't use it if it's only on an iPhone.
That's a shame. That's a real shame.
That would make me sad because I'm loving this idea.
Great pick. Hopefully it's released soon and everybody can enjoy it. Awesome. Joel, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week is a curriculum that is free. I found out about it through Andrew Marin's blog a while ago, but I dumped it into my little secret folder of picks of the week. And it's goldenrulepledge.com. There's free curriculum on there for you to do. You can either do an 80 to 90 minute youth meeting and do it all, or you can break it up into a two part series. And actually, the way I'm using this is I'm going to do a one nighter local weekend retreat with my middle and high school students and the parents for the first night. And then the parents are going to leave all the students with adult leaders, and we're going to just have fun and all that stuff. And this is really just talking about bullying and bullying prevention. And it's something that I hear more and more as I'm hanging out in the schools, especially in the lower income areas where I serve on a weekly basis in those schools. And so I'll be implementing this curriculum into my programming time at the public schools next year. I kind of have like free reign to do whatever I want in the public school. It's kind of a unique situation. So I can bring in scripture and Christian principles and not have to worry about anything. So it's a great free resource for an issue that's definitely, if you're in youth ministry at all and you're in any school, you're running into this more and more. And it's getting – I was talking to one pastor yesterday. We went to a locally here in Albany. We have a local high school that just started the first ever GSA club, Gay Straight Alliance, and we were there hanging out with the kids, and we were just amazed and really horrified by some of the things that the kids have heard in the hallway and comments that have been said to them that are involved in the club. And as the name implies, Gay Straight Alliance means that there are kids in that club that are straight, but of course everybody's getting labeled as being gay. And so we couldn't believe some of the stuff that the school allows to go on. And it really just comes down to, he said, she said kind of argument. And so there's no proof, but there's been vandalism against the club and all those things. So anywhere you see stuff like that going on, this is just a great resource. And the best part about it, again, it's free. So
goldenrulepledge.com.
Yeah. Well, and there's pledge cards there that you can, they've got everything. And I put the link on there, so I know you'll be putting it up on the blog to the actual resources page. But take a look at everything. There's a video. Just great, great stuff.
I look forward to hearing about your event.
Yeah.
You need to shoot some video or write it up or something. So we can.
Yeah, I definitely will. I know that, being in a small town, the one awesome thing is you do something like this and you get all of the major media outlets to come and put it on the news.
So, you've been really blessed with good interaction from your local news. So
I have. I mean, I have youth ministry friends that are like, how the heck do you get that? I was like, well, first of all, you live in a small town and it really is just going out and doing simple things that Yeah. I don't know.
I was going to say step two is you do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to our earlier discussion.
Yeah. And exactly. Step three, just contact them. If you're in a smaller town like I am, you know, this would have never happened in Atlanta. I mean, you're not going to get on the knees in Atlanta for opting to take spring break and serve the poor in the community in Atlanta. It's just not.
I don't know, man. Dude,
you could try, but dude, it's not as easy as where I get to call the guy on his cell phone and say, "Hey, listen, this is what we're doing. All right, we'll send a reporter out.
Sure,
we'll see you at 11."
But you know? We got on the news because we went down to the King Center when Coretta Scott King died.
Oh, you know? Okay.
Remember that?
No, I don't.
Christy Harp.
Oh yes.
If you actually, you know, get off your couch and do stuff, people notice things.
Yeah.
So. Amen. You could be a coach, Josh.
I probably need to get some experience under my belt. I also probably need to learn how to be nice to people. Mm-hmm. Another step. Mm. No, I'm very nice to people. Sometimes, you know, I try not to let it be this, but every once in a while, you know, the podcast becomes kind of the outlet for my id. Only in small ways. But, you know, the internet can be that way, right? It's like your angry
you
alter
keyboard
ego.
Keyboard Rambo. Is that you?
Yeah. I hope not. Gosh. I try not to be that. Okay, I have a pick as well, and I need to remember what it is now. I closed my doc.
Oops.
Oh, I've got it. Oh. Okay, so we had our big senior night this Sunday.
A lot of tears?
Tears?
Honestly, did people laugh or cry at Sarah's video?
You know, with Sarah, there's usually not that much difference.
Oh, you should not pick on her when she is not here.
No.
No. We're going to hear about that one later.
Stand up for her, sister.
No. Sarah knows that I tease because I like to tell her that she's the little sister I never wanted.
Not so sweet.
Let's see here. Okay, so I did something at senior night that I never thought I would do. And that is, I gave out a book about college to our college students as the senior gift. I mean, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, what are you going to give them? And what's the likelihood of giving the book? I would have said zero. I would rather give them nothing. I would rather give them like a form letter where I wrote their name in a blank and signed my name at the bottom. But this book, I think Kenda Dean or whoever runs the Fuller Youth Institute Facebook page, which by the way is great. Man, there's like every day there's interesting links coming up just from the news around teenagers there. But they posted and said, hey, normally these books are terrible, but this is good. You should check it out. And it's from CPYU, which is the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, which I think is Walt Mueller's organization.
It is.
And so I read the first chapter, read the acclaim, and thought, man, this seems like the kind of thing that would be really good for to get in our kids' hands. So I actually bought 20 or so copies and we handed them out. And it's a great book. So I have not read every page, but I read the first couple of chapters and then scanned the rest of it. And this is good stuff. It's the kind of thing I think students, you know, the big question is, will they read it? I don't know if they're going to actually crack the first page. But if they do, I think it's the kind of thing that will pull them in a bit. And if they read, I think it's something that they're really going to be able to pull good stuff out of. Let's see if I can go over here and look at the description. Well, okay, here's one thing that I really like about it is a lot of these. Looks like we lost Joel. A lot of these books and a lot of the stuff around going to college has kind of an adversarial tone.
Yeah.
This definitely does not have that. This is not about how to protect yourself from the brainwashing you're going to get at your state school. It's just kind of about how to become an adult, how to be a Christ follower, how to think about your time in college, how to think about the stuff you're going through. I don't know. It's really, really well written. I think anyone familiar with Walt and the stuff he does know that it's top notch. So it's called Making College Count: A Faithful Guide to Life and Learning. We'll post that in the show notes. Joel, you there, man?
Yeah.
Dude, you missed my whole pick.
I know.
So
now I have to listen to the whole podcast.
That stinks. It's a shame that anyone would have to
take notes, though. Yeah.
Take you had notes. To go back for the Steve Jobs quote anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. You're right.
Awesome. Well, Patty,
also, I just want to do one thing I promised to do tonight. I actually have one student in my youth ministry that listens to this podcast every week. So big shout out to Chris Durbin.
I love Chris. Hi, Chris.
So Dubs, there you go. I talked about you on the podcast.
Chris
he's graduating this year.
He's a very active internet user.
Yes,
he is.
He is.
Yes.
He's going to be a missionary someday.
You know, we just had a conversation about that, Patty.
I know this about him.
Good.
We were in Haiti together, remember?
Yes.
You know, I've always thought that we're all missionaries.
But, well, we are. But he's going to be a missionary in the intentional go somewhere not America way.
Oh, so you're saying he's going to be a real one?
No, I go somewhere in the not America way. Yeah.
You are feisty today, sir.
Am I?
Sorry. Is that a pet peeve?
A little bit.
No, not at all.
A little bit.
Because I'm a missionary to Schenectady. And most people can't even pronounce that. So.
Now, that is an Eastern Bloc country, right? Formerly Eastern Bloc?
Yes.
I think it's a movie.
Schenectady Stan. Yes.
Schenectady Stan.
Isn't it a film?
Schenectady?
Yes, yeah, Schenectady, New York.
Yeah, it's the home of General Electric.
Oh.
Yeah, who knew? Thomas Edison once lived there.
Neato.
Have you seen the Charlie Kaufman movie, Schenectady, New York?
No. I didn't even know there was a movie.
I hear it's good. It's now the town is Schenectady. Is that
yes.
how it's pronounced? The film is Schenectady. Schenectady.
Oh. Well, that's fairly accurate.
So I think it's a play on words, yeah. So it's supposed to be a great movie.
It's a tough town.
Well, hey, Patty, thank you so much for joining us. Our shows are always awesome when you come on and hang out with us.
Oh, I appreciate it. I love talking with you guys.
You raise the intelligence of the conversation. I think I can say that, not offend anyone.
Oh, Okay.
I mean for me, if anyone's asking. So. Yeah, we love having you on. And
Sarah, come back. Sarah.
Oh, no, Sarah's the best.
She's awesome.
She is.
Yeah.
She is.
I love listening to her.
It was just cool not to get insulted for one episode.
Can I say I really miss it?
Yeah, I do too.
I don't know how to work in relationships where everyone's always nice, positive. I need a little.
Gosh.
I need a little. A little elbow with everything.
So. I'll have to try harder to be mean next time.
No, you be yourself. No, she'll come back and be Sarah next week. So it'll be okay. Great. So anyway, thanks a lot, guys. As always, you can contact us at podcast@youthx.com. Or actually, you can go to youthx.com/contact and see our phone number, because every episode, I forget what it is. And leave us a voicemail there, or find us on Twitter and Facebook. And we'll talk to you guys next week.